Hi, I'm Lisa Levin.
And I'm Julie Sapper.
We're the co-founders of Run Farther and Faster and co-hosts of the podcast under the same name.
Well, we started this podcast as a Boston Marathon-focused podcast based on the experiences from our combined 31 finishes. We cover all things running-related.
We've coached runners of all levels and goal distances all over the world for over 13 years.
Thanks so much for joining us. We are so excited you're here.
Hey, Julie.
Hey, Lisa. How's it going?
It's going pretty well. Happy leap year day or leap day.
Happy February 29th. Always a fun day, an extra day to work out and train for races and an extra day to go for a run and an extra day to prepare for filing taxes and all the things. So happy leap day. And
happy leap day. I always like to think about the people who have birthdays on leap day because that must be kind of fun to get your birthday. Really, you have to celebrate your birthday every 4 years. So happy birthday to anyone whose birthday is February 29th.
Yeah, for sure. It's been a rough week in the running community. We are devastated to learn of the murder of Lake and Riley, a student at former student at the University of Georgia who was in nursing school at Augusta, who went out for a run in broad daylight on a weekday on the campus of University of Georgia in Athens, which we are certain that that campus takes all the safety provisions it can, like many college campuses. She, of course, told a roommate where she was going. And when she didn't return, her roommate reported her missing. She did everything right. And what went wrong was that she had the misfortune of encountering a violent man who saw her as an opportunity. And this isn't about runner safety. She was as safe as she possibly could be. This is about violent people who see women as an opportunity to commit a crime. It's about violence. And I know there's a lot of chatter out there about how to keep women safer. But to me, the conversation is, how do we prevent men from being violent and killing women, and in this case, more women runners? And there is a long list of women runners. Since we've been recording this podcast, we've probably had a conversation about this, I'd say one to two times a year.
Absolutely.
It's not changing. And it's not Lakin's fault at all. It's not her fault. It's a system. There are many layers to this. Of course, a lot of people are talking about his immigration status. That's a layer. Folks are talking about the fact that he had a prior criminal charges for which he had not appeared in court. That's a layer. What was he doing there? Another layer is his brother, who used a fake green card to obtain employment at the University of Georgia briefly, which led him to live near the campus. That's a layer. But all of this, to me, also comes down to a man with clear problems, had mental health problems, that has a propensity toward violence, that decided to be violent toward a young woman who had such a promising future. It is devastating. I don't know what to do about it. I have no answers. I just want to share my grief, our grief, and say that we are thinking so much of this young woman's family and friends and how devastated we are as fellow runners to learn of her passing. And it should never, ever happen.
Yeah, we're getting sick of hearing these kinds of stories come across the news, and whether it be somebody out for a run or just out shopping or out doing everyday, everyday life things, we should all be able to do that safely. And it's a really upsetting story, like you said, on many levels.
Yeah. So may her memory be a blessing. And now we're going to shift. I don't have a transition for this, so we're just going to transition over to running. So, Lisa, last week we talked about you running the RRCA 10-mile race, which kicked off your racing season as you prepare for Boston. How'd it go?
It went well. I was pleasantly surprised. I think we talked about this last week, and if you listen last year to about this time when we talked about this race, I had a really disappointing race. This is always a hard race for me. First of all, I'm not a cold weather runner, and it's always cold for this race. Many years it's been pouring rain, which is even worse. And it's, for me, usually the first race of the season. I mean, my last races are usually in December, and then I don't do any races until this race. And I did the half marathon in Argentina, but that was the first couple days in January. So it's still been a couple of months. And, you know, it just, you never know. Like, I always feel a little rusty here. And the race itself is really a challenging course. It's a downhill on the first 5 miles and then uphill the second. And every time you just turn a corner, there's another hill. It's like, I just remember how many times I was running the race this time, that we'd come around a corner, we'd see what's next. And I hear people around me go, "Oh no, not again." Or, "Oh no." Like, you just see, and there are these big hills that you come around and you see, like, "Oh my gosh, you have to go up there." And you would hear these groans around you. And I'm like, "Yeah, I hear you. I feel it." But I felt really good this year. I felt strong. I felt strong through the finish. I actually looked at my splits. My last like 2 or 3 miles were faster than mile like 5 and 6. So I went, you know, it was fast the first 5 miles because it's down. And then the next 2 miles were had slowed down a little bit, but then I sped up again and I felt really good and I felt strong and I finished over a minute faster than last year. So that felt good. And I felt good. Like my fitness, I felt like my fitness is in a good place. Like, so that was reassuring to me. And it's just such a fun, it's a fun race. It's fun. This is, you know, I think I mentioned last week, it's not, you know, there are no individual results. It's all team results. So it's fun to be part of a team. Running is such an individual sport. So it's fun to be representing part of a team. Now I'm still on the Masters women team. And I will say not only our team, but all of the teams, the Masters women rock. Like most of the top finishers of this race were 40 and up. I would say 40, 41. Awesome. So as a 49 year old, I'm like, I'm ready to be in the Grandmaster. So next year I'll be in the Grandmasters category, which is 50 and up. And I feel like I'll be able to score better for our team as a Grandmaster than I can as a master now. But it's just really neat to see and inspiring to see how many really strong 40 plus women there are out there. Like our team typically wins the Masters women at our, you know, cumulative score. And we didn't even win this year. We were second place this year. And like the first place team, every single one of their scores was under 108, I think, which is incredible for, you know, Masters women. So that to me is really neat to see. And it was fun. And yeah, so I feel good about my fitness and had a good time and onward to the rest.
That's
of training.
Awesome. Congratulations. Yeah. Is that going to be your only tune-up before Boston, or are you doing another?
No, I've got two more. I'm doing the same as I did last year, same exact schedule. I'm doing the Annapolis half marathon, which is in March. Did it last year. I'll do it again this year. And then Cherry Blossom, which is only a week before Boston. But yeah. I've done that before, a week before, and hopefully it works out okay. So we'll see how I feel as that gets closer. But yeah, so I've got two more tune-ups and yeah, we'll see how those go.
Sounds great. I'm really excited for you. I know we talked about this last time that you didn't love the race last year, and the fact that you're feeling good heading into the season is always a good feeling. And as far as Cherry Blossom before Boston, we've both done that for many years. It's just a matter, and for folks listening who are also doing Cherry Blossom before Boston, our advice is it's a great opportunity to practice MP. And then if you're feeling really good, then the next segment of the race, you can push it for the last 5 miles and have a really great tempo workout, and then just skip speed or a tune-up workout before the actual marathon, and you'll be good to go. Especially if you've been running at a higher volume, that shouldn't set you back as you taper for Boston. So moving on, we are really excited that we have a great guest this week. She is running in the pro field at the Boston Marathon. She is also a Masters runner. So this is the third Masters runner that we are talking with on our podcast this season who is running in the Boston Marathon pro field. Her name is Alexandra Allie Niles. And Allie, this is her first time being interviewed on a podcast, which amazed us because she is a rock star runner. She ran in the 2020 trials, and she has a really interesting story. Before she started running, she was a gymnast. She actually was on the James Madison University gymnastics team, and she continues to be to this day a gymnastics coach in New Jersey. And she runs with her team in New Jersey. And for years, she had a phenomenal coach who's very well known, Tom Fleming, who sadly passed away. And she talks about the impact that Tom, who was not only a veteran Boston Marathoner himself, but placed, I believe, second in the Boston Marathon and was an elite runner himself, and the influence that he had on her when she ran her first Boston. And she talks about her history with the race, advice that she has for running the race, and her approach to running. She is also interesting because Allie, as her job, she's a gymnastics coach. So she works just like so many of us. She trains around her work, and a lot of what she does is standing. She does not have a job that's conducive for the volume of running she does. So it was really interesting to talk to her and learn about her approach to training. And we're just super proud of Allie, and we appreciate that she joined us today. And we're so honored that we're the first podcast that she's been interviewed on. And we're hopeful that by elevating her story, more people will get to know Allie and perhaps have them on their shows as well. So before we go, speaking of Boston training, we just want to remind folks that now is a great time to schedule a coaching call with us. We announced a couple of weeks ago a new service that we're providing in addition to our private virtual coaching service, which we do year round. And of course, you can contact us about that anytime, and we'll let you know when we can fit you on our rosters. But we're also offering a different type of service, which is a coaching consultation with us for your race. We recommend doing this for an upcoming half marathon or marathon, and we recommend doing it at least 3 weeks out from your race so you have time to implement some of the race strategies and information that we can provide to you on the call. But if you're interested in doing this service, you can sign up for it by simply emailing us at julieandlisa@runfartherandfaster.com or heading over to our website where you can sign up for the call. And we'll schedule you according to the date of your race and make sure that we provide you with all of the information you need to run the best race possible based on the training you have. So Lisa, with that, we're going to introduce Allie Niles. I hope you have a great week.
You too, Julie. Bye.
Bye.
Alexandra Niles, welcome to the Run Farther and Faster podcast. Is it okay if we call you Allie?
Yes.
Okay, well, welcome. We're really excited that you're joining us. It's our understanding this is your first podcast interview, which is incredible to us because you have such a phenomenal story and you're such a talented runner. So we're really excited to share your story with our listeners. So first of all, to get started, can you share a little bit about your background, where you're from, your professional and personal background, and when you started running?
I'm from New Jersey. I've lived here since I was four. And I started running when I was about 23, maybe. Prior to that, I was a gymnast. So I was a gymnast through high school and college and didn't want to run, thought it was crazy. Obviously, now I do run. Professionally, I'm a gymnastics coach. So that's my full-time job.
Very cool. That's very similar, Julie and I, but not that we were gymnasts when we were younger. We also did not start running until we were in our 20s. It seems like there are a lot now of distance runners that were gymnasts. So I think that's an interesting background, and at least gives you the background and understanding of training and focus on training. So tell us a little bit about like how you started running, when you started, like how did that transition happen when you did not like running when you were younger?
So the year after I graduated, I still wasn't sure like what I was going to do. So I was done with college gymnastics. I was coaching and I was still actually competing for a club here in New Jersey. And our coach was like, oh, you know, everyone needs some more floor endurance. So you starting, it was like, I think it was like November or December. It's New Jersey. And he used to make us run outside around the building next to the gym. Which he goes, I drove around it in my truck. It was like, it's a 10th of a mile. So he used to make us run like 10 laps around. And it's like, all right, this is cold. This is crazy. But when I like to compete, and that spring I stopped doing gymnastics, but I was like, oh, like maybe I'll run. I can, you know, join a running club. I can meet people. Like it was literally just something to do. Something, you know, I wasn't going to go join like a, you know, softball, you know, league or anything. So it really started as a way for me to keep competing and to meet people. Like I don't drink, so I don't go to bars. I was out of college. Like how am I, I'll meet some runners. The plan I did not want to run a marathon. I pretty much figured I'll run some 5Ks, like just, you know, and have fun with it. So that's kind of where that was the plan.
Love it. So I want to ask you a couple questions before we move into your running about gymnastics as a whole. What was it like competing at the level you competed in high school and then being a college gymnast. Was it more laid back once you got to college? And where did you compete in gymnastics collegiately?
So I went to James Madison down in Virginia, which unfortunately no longer has a program. College gymnastics, almost 20 years ago. So it's very different from what you see today. Gymnastics is very different. The club I went to during high school wasn't super, super intense. So it wasn't a huge change. It was still pretty much the same.
And so when you started running and you made that transition from competing in gymnastics to running, you were still coaching gymnastics. So what do you feel from gymnastics did you use as a coach and as a competitor that you were able to apply to running when you started? And what was it like for you starting a brand new sport where you weren't an expert? How did that feel? And what was that like for you?
I think part of it is like, people always ask me, they're like, oh, do you coach yourself? I don't coach myself. I have a coach. Except for like the first 2 years I ran, I've always had a coach. As far as the like gymnastics to running, I think just basically like a lot of like the mental side of it, like, you know things are going to be hard. I'm also a better runner than I was a gymnast, which for me makes it a little bit easier. And I'll be honest, running's not scary. I'm not flipping upside down on a balance beam. But like things like, you're having a tough workout and knowing like, just how to like get through workouts, get through like tough times. I think that's sort of more where the gymnastics comes into play. A little stubborn. When I started also, like I wasn't even sure like, would my body hold up? Like, did I do, am I too injured? Am I too like broken from gymnastics? And it wasn't like, I didn't have any issues with that, which was nice. But yeah, I would say more mentally than anything.
So you mentioned having a coach, and we know that Tom Fleming was your coach starting, I think, in 2009. Was he your first coach that you had? And how did that relationship begin? How did you get from, I'm just going to run a few 5Ks to eventually the marathon distance. And did he play a role in that? Or did he come in once you decided that? How did that relationship develop?
So when I started there, there's a Fleet Feet in Montclair. That's that's a very, very good store. And when I started running, I was, running. I think I ran my first 5K in like maybe a little under 23 minutes. But my mom used to come and watch. And I think basically like, which I was like, why would you want to come watch me race? Like, I'm going to run away and then you're going to see me come back and that's it. And I think she would talk to people and, I was just doing this for fun. And I think she just kind of would talk to people and sort of figured out stuff about running, but she had gone to Fleet Feet to get something for me. And she was talking to the owner and was asking about their running club. And he asked how fast I ran and she told him, and he was like, well, we don't really have anyone running that fast. So that was kind of like, and they, I guess they have at some point, but it's a huge like community like group that they have. So it's, a little bit, basically he was like, yeah, there's not really anyone that I could run with. But I think because she was one who was like, oh, like there's this coach. And he used to be like this, really good marathon runner. And he's like, he's a teacher and he coaches high school, but he coaches on the side. And this was like a year. I'd been running for like a year. And I was like, that's, this is just for fun. I don't want to, this doesn't have to be a thing. And I like took like another year. Cause it was, I think I'd run for like 2 years. And same thing. She was like, what are you going to do with this? Like at this point I'd run like, I think I'd run like a 19 minute 5K. She's like, reach out to him and see. And I didn't know, I'm like, this guy's going to be like, what do you want? He's in my head. I'm like, he's like a really good marathon runner. Like, that's not what I want to do. That's not, you know, I'm not that good. But, you know, I met him at Brookdale Park and I trained with his high, basically trained with his high school runners. I trained with his boys team. And yeah, when I started running with him, I said, you know, I want to run the 5K and the mile. And I think he knew more sooner than I did that I was not a short distance runner, but he let me go with it, which was very nice of him, and figure that out on my own a little bit.
And so you worked with him for many years, correct?
Yeah, he was my coach from 2009 until he passed in 2017.
Right. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in a little bit, but, so how did he, you know, convince you to try the marathon, and when was the first time you ran a marathon? Like, how did that happen? We are 5K miler and, never going to run a marathon. So when did that happen?
Actually, I have a bunch of cousins who live out in Michigan and they run for fun. And there's a 10-mile race, CRIM, which is out in Flint in August. And they run it every year. And they were like, you're running now. You should come out and do it. And I went 1 year and I did the 5K. And I was like, all right, the 5K, you know, when it's not like the big race, it's like, you know, you hang around and wait. And like, it, you know, wasn't, I was like, all right, I'll come out and I'll run this 10-mile run. I'm like, in my head, I'm going to hate this. This is stupid. And I loved it. And I came back and I was like, oh my God, the 10-mile was great. And, you know, Tom's clearly like, obviously, like he knew this. And he was like, okay, find a half to run. I was like, okay. So I ran the Staten Island half this was 2010. So I ran CRIM 10-miler. I ran Staten Island half. And was, you know, basically, I guess whatever time I ran got me, I guess it gets you, like, if you have like a fast half time, you can get into New York or something. And so I was like, oh, like my time got me into New York. And he was like, that can't be your first marathon. So he was like, he's like, all right, you can run a marathon, but that one can't be your first.
I agree with him.
Yeah. And I have run New York once and I agree with him too, because I never would have run again. I ended up running in October of 2011 or in October, end of September, I guess October, late September, early October, 2011, I ran the Wine Glass Marathon. Okay. It was right before the 2012 trials. And I didn't know that was a thing. Like, I knew, like, from gymnastics, I'm like, oh, you have to be, if you're on the national team, like, so the Olympic, so I'm reading all these articles, like, going in the race, and they're like, oh, so-and-so is trying to run for the, I was like, what do you mean trying to qualify for the Olympic trial? Like, not realizing, like, oh, you can just, like, that's, like, a thing that you can do, which was nice, because there were a group of women trying, which was kind of cool, like, to, and I think the woman who won, I want to say she like just missed it. The weather was like really bad. But it was a good race, and I finished and was like, all right, like maybe we'll do this again.
What was your time in your first marathon?
2:54.
Okay, that's amazing. And now that gives us a framework to better understand why the Olympic trials was part of the conversation after running a marathon that was only 10 minutes over the standard at the time to qualify for the trials. So when you broke three and ran your first marathon in that time and not so ideal conditions, did that kind of change your approach to your running? Did you suddenly switch from being more of a recreational runner to a more professional approach to your running, given that you also are a coach yourself?
I honestly don't know. I think it was more of like, you know, oh, this is kind of cool. Like I can do, you know, maybe I'd qualify. It was more like I'd qualify to Boston, and I wasn't running that race, like trying to run the trials time. I didn't really know, like, and I didn't even know, like, I just was kind of like, everyone's like, oh, what was your goal for your first race? I'm like, to finish. Like, literally, I remember standing at the start line, and it was like, it's raining, and it was like raining in like 38 degrees or something ridiculous. And I looked at my dad and I just went, what am I supposed to do? And he goes, just run. He's like, I'll be at mile nine, I'll be wherever. And like, I'm like, okay. Like I trained for it, but like, I didn't really know, still didn't know what to expect. And so my time qualified me for Boston and then that 2012. So then I think my second race, I went down to Virginia Beach and I ran Shamrock in 2012. I forgot what I ran that fall. Might have been Bay State, but I ran, and so my first Boston was Boston. It was in 2013.
That's quite a year to have your first Boston is 2013.
Yeah.
So what do you, so first of all, Tom, he was a big Boston fan, right? I think he had run Boston a lot. So did he prepare you for Boston? Was he, you know, gung-ho and getting you ready for Boston?
Yeah. Boston was his favorite race. And I think he was second there, I think twice, and definitely wanted to win it. So yeah, we went up in March of that year. We went up to Boston. He has a friend who still lives up there near the start. So he stayed with his friend. I stayed like in a hotel near there. And we drove up. I'd been away. I'd actually been on vacation with my family in like St. John. So it was like, I got home the next day. We drove up to Boston. So there's like snow. Drove to the hotel. I changed into running clothes, drove to the start line. And he's like, all right, you're going to just run straight. I'll drive and I'm going to stop you at 13. I think I ran like a 10 mile PR just running out of the car, because the whole thing is like friggin' downhill and it was crazy. And then the next day we ran the second half. And we did that. So I did that. We did that that year. We did it the next year. So I ran in 2014 also. And then we did the same thing the next year. We did it a little differently because I told him, I was like, Heartbreak Hill, you had to show me where it was when you run it like in two parts. But I was like, it's, you know, it's harder when you're like in the race. So I think the next year we went up and did like a 20 mile run on it or something.
What do you remember most from your first Boston?
The crowds, probably, because all the races I'd done since then were smaller and didn't have that kind of crowd support. And I just remember thinking, like, even if you wanted to drop out of this race, you couldn't. Like, there's just too many people trying to, like, you know, watching, and there's just cheering you on. My dad came up with me that year. And was at a couple, he used to live in Boston. So he like, no, and anytime he travels to a marathon, his favorite thing is to like figure out like where he can be on the course. So he was trying to think exactly. He was a couple different spots though. And like he told me, so like, if I knew, like I knew where he was, so like I could like, you know, he would, but like there were people who were like, I saw you and I was like jumping up and down. And I'm like, I didn't know you were going to be there. I didn't see you. But I did. I had a couple of friends out on who were lived up there. And so it was cool. It was a very cool experience. And then I had been able to start like in the front, and I think I ran 2:51 at Boston. And so my dad and I were in the car and we were driving home. And my stepmom called and she's like, oh my gosh, like, what, you know, why didn't you tell people you're okay or whatever? And we had no idea what she was talking about. And we like put the radio on and we were like, oh, okay. Both of us, our phones were dying. We ended up stopping to like, you know, charge our phones. I went like on my iPad or whatever to like, just put something on Facebook. Like, I'm fine. Like, we're on the way home. And it was funny. It's like, I know there were people who were like, oh, I'm not going to go back, whatever. And I was like, no, I'm going back next year. So that was, and I did, we went back in 2014.
And what was 2014 like for you? We were there both years as well and had similar experience in 2013 with respect to reaching out to family and using Facebook as a means of communication to let everyone know we were safe. And then, like you, we felt there absolutely it was imperative to return in 2014. And what was that experience like for you?
I think as far as like the race, I mean, to be honest, I want to say if the crowds may have been better in 2014. There were it was very different. Like the Athlete Village, there were people like military. There were dogs. There were guys with machine guns. The security was pretty wild. We actually in the fall of 2013, got one of the guys who I run with was running New York, and Tom had gotten tickets to like be able to sit on like the sides. So we went in to that, see that, and it was like that was like there were gates everywhere. They were checking IDs. I mean, they had like these giant trucks full of sand. So that was really where it was like, yeah, a year later at Boston, it was very different, but even like 6 months later at New York. And then even 2 years later, Chicago 2014 had the same giant trucks like in Grant Park. So that was kind of, but as far as like the race, I mean, I think the crowds were bigger. In 2014, there were two of the guys, the one of the guys who's now my coach, another guy who I still run with all the time. We were running together, we had trained together, we were trying to run, and we all kind of had rough days. But Tom had come up to watch. I don't remember if my dad was there in 2014 or not. He may not have been. But it was, we didn't have as good of a race as I'd want. I ran a little bit faster than I ran in 2013, but I was trying to get the, I think at that point, I was trying to get the 243 standard for 2016. And was like, I hadn't even broken 250, but I mean, I was like, hey, I'm gonna go for it and see. So like that was one of the races I was trying to get it and didn't come close. So
Well, eventually you did succeed, but before that, you had, as you mentioned before, a real tragedy. So, do you want to share what happened and how that has impacted your running?
I was 2017 in 20 fall of 2016. I ran New York and had a really rough race. So we decided 2017, like, all right, I'm gonna wait. We're not gonna run a spring. We're not gonna run a spring race. I'm gonna run, try to go back to Hartford. I run Hartford in 2015, and that was my PR. And I was like, we'll go back to Hartford in the fall and try to get the new standard, which was like two at that they'd switched it now. It was like back to 245. And so I didn't have a lot of races planned that spring. I was doing just like short stuff. And I was at work one night and I don't have my phone when I coach. And it was like in between classes. And I went to my, picked up my phone and I had a bunch of missed calls from Alden, he's my coach now. He was Tom's assistant coach at MKA. And I had all these missed calls and like and he needed Tom's daughter's phone number and I called him and I knew I was like that's like some I knew something was going on. And he was like, he's like, I don't know exactly. He basically was like, I don't know exactly what happened. Tom was at a high school track meet and didn't feel good. And then I guess he went to his car and someone found him passed out. He had a heart attack. And he was like there, so he wasn't really able to tell me much other than he was just trying to get in touch with Tom's daughter. And so there was a lot of like, we got her number and everything. And then he ended up calling me later, a couple hours later, and telling me that he had passed. And that was like it was right after Boston in 2017. I think it was like 3 days later, or 2 days later. And so I had a couple races left, and Alden had sort of said like, I can help you out for the next couple races. And I was like, yeah, that's great. Like, I don't know I don't really know, like, what am I going to do? You know, I didn't really like, so, you know, kind of like, I was like, yeah, all right, we trained together. He coached with Tom. Like, I'm sure it'll be pretty similar. And, so, you know, I got through like I had a couple more. I was racing like the 25K championships out in Grand Rapids, and a couple smaller races. And then I actually ended up breaking my foot in June. And so I was like, all right. And Alden's a triathlete. And he's like, well, I can give you like swim workouts. So I was like, fine, like this'll work. Like, we'll do it this way. So I spent the summer swimming. And it kind of just went from there. And so Alden became my coach then, and he still coaches me now.
And how did that race go in 2017? Then in fall 2017, did you go back to Hartford?
No. So I was in a pool, July and August, doing a lot of swimming, and started running again in end of August, early September. I ran the Richmond half in November just to kind of like get something in or whatever. So I ran the Richmond half and had a friend of mine, Sika Henry, the triathlete. Huh? I'm sure you know. She lives down in Virginia, and I'd been trying to pick a race, like a spring race. So I was like, all right, I want to run something in 2018. Sort of with the like, okay, maybe I'm trying to qualify for the trials, but more like I hadn't raced a marathon since New York. So it'd been like over a year, and I wasn't sure what race. And, you know, she was like, oh, this race is flat. So I'd reached out to them sort of asking, like, I think I'm going for the standard. Is your race going to be sanctioned? And then they were like, yeah, like you should apply for our elite category. And I was like, well, I was like, yeah, I was like, but I haven't run a race in there. It was like, you know, you have to run one in the last like year. And I was like, my last like time that would have gotten me into your elite field was Shamrock in 2016. And it was like a nor'easter. And the guy goes, wait, you ran that fast? I ran like a 249. He's like, you ran 249 in that weather? He's like, I got a spot in the elite field. You'll be fine.
So nice.
So that was we figured, you know, I'm not going to try to run anything in 2017 because I've been injured. So that was March of 2018. So that was the first marathon that I ran since Tom had passed and I kind of went into it like, all right, I have no idea what's going to happen. We had a giant I was supposed to fly down. We had a giant nor'easter. I got to the airport and all the flights had been canceled. So I was like, all right, it's an 8-hour drive. And I'd driven myself to the airport. So I just drove down to Virginia Beach. I was like, it's Friday. The race is Sunday. I'll be fine. I mean, I got down there, and like down there, even like the winds were like crazy. I'm like, this is going to be awful. And it's a point to point course. And by the race day, it was like much better, but it was also like a slight tailwind, which was great because if you'd been running into it, it would have been horrible. And that is actually, that race is my PR still. I ran a 240 and qualified the trials and was kind of not expecting it. So it was a little bit weird. I was like, yeah, like maybe I run like a 244, maybe I can just get under it. Alden had since moved, and his family had since moved down to Richmond. So he was able to drive down and be there. And Sika was running the 8K. And I remember crossing the finish line and someone came like running up to me. And at first I'm just like, I have no idea. And it was Sika. And I was like, and she, cause she had finished and she had been like, I guess the running store that puts it on, she like, you know, would ran for them or whatever. But that was really cool. It was like, my dad was in Vermont. He wasn't able to be there. I remember like, you know, I remember saying I just need like, someone was like, oh, I can get your bag. I was like, can I, someone just get me to my coach. And he was like, great.
So that's a great story.
That was a pretty cool race. Cause I at like, I didn't know, at least I didn't really know, I like didn't realize like how fast I was going. And my coach was at like 23, because he said, he's like, I'm going to drive down. He's like, I'm going to drive down that morning. Like, where do you want me? I said, I really just want you at the finish. Like, that's, I want you at the finish. And he was at 23 and he's like, you look great. And in my head, I'm like, yeah, but I still have a 5K to go. Like, you know, and then like, my hands get really cold. And so I like missed like a cup and I could hear him like laughing at me. And I'm like, great. Like, I fine, whatever. And then he was the finish. But somebody asked me, they were like, when did you know you were going to like qualify for the trials? I'm like, when I turned the corner and saw the giant clock at the finish line, because I kept going like, okay, like, nope, I still have like too far to go. Like, anything could happen.
Well, those are the best, like victories when like, you're not trying, you know, you don't, it's not, you have it in your mind. You went with what worked that day and what felt good and you did it, which is amazing. And so this year you're going back to Boston for the first time since 2014, correct? And yeah. The first time since Tom passed. And you are in the pro field and you're one of the few women, masters women, in the pro or elite field. So tell us, what does that mean to you? What are you looking forward to this year? What are you know, what's going through your mind as you're getting ready to go back to Boston?
So I had always wanted to go back like just one time. I think it would have been in 2021, the date of the race would have fallen on the date that Tom passed. And so initially I'd always wanted to go back and run, but that was the year that they moved it to the fall. So I was like, oh, okay, whatever. I don't want to do that. I was trying to qualify for trials this time around and kind of was like, you know, there's a, you know, it's pretty fast. You know, there's a chance I'm not going to make it. If I don't make it, like, I want to run something in the spring. And there really aren't that many great spring races. So in, you know, whenever the window to register, I registered and, you know, you put your time in or whatever. And it was like, oh, would you like to be part of the pro field if you qualified? I was like, sure. Like, whatever. Like, I'm not going to get in the pro field. It's like my time's like a 2:43. And then, you know, it was like in December thing, I guess. And they're like, oh yeah, like you're gonna be, you know, if you would like to accept this. And I was like, obviously, like I'm gonna say yes. Because like that would be like, I think that, but you know, I said, and I when I first found out, I called my dad and then I texted my coach and I was like, I've done some cool stuff like since Tom passed, like I qualified for the trials. I ran on the 50K Worlds team. I was like, and I said to my coach, I was like, I think this would probably be the thing he would think was the coolest. And he was like, yeah, like for any event, you know, to run the pro field at Boston, I think he'd be like, he'd definitely get a kick out of that. He would think that's pretty cool.
I love that so much. And I just want to comment before we continue asking questions. You are so modest. Like you are such an established, accomplished runner. And I love that you were surprised that you were invited into the pro field after all these years of just incredible running in a relatively short time. And of course, competing in the 2020 trials. I just love that even today, it's still something that you treasure. And I think that's really remarkable. And so just tell us out of curiosity, what are the communications like from the BAAA to those in the pro field? And what do you know so far about what is expected of you? And in terms of logistics, if anything, as a professional field runner at Boston?
It's pretty similar to, I ran in the elite field in New York. And then at CIM 1 year, and then like the Olympic trials, obviously was the whole thing was an elite field. But it's pretty like standard, like email basically was like, you know, you're in the elite field, it's not, cause it's like, I guess they have like the pro, like invited field and they have like the, like also elite field, but you're not a pro. I don't know exactly how they like distinguish it, but like, so like, you know, I have bottles on the course, you know, say like all that stuff, but like I have to find my own hotel room or whatever. And basically they were kind of like, you know, just stay near the hotel because the technical meetings, all that is at like the wherever the host hotel. But as far as it's, communications basically just emails. Like we got when they announced the pro women's field, we got an email the day, maybe we got an email the day before because we knew already. So I knew back in December, but similar to New York, New York would tell you all right, you're in the field, but you can't announce it until they make their announcement on social media. And Boston was the same. And then it was basically all right, we're going to make our announcement at this time tomorrow. After that, you can post whatever, you can put up whatever you want about it. And then pretty much that's kind of it. There's not a lot of I guess maybe closer to the race there will be. But similar to New York, there's not a whole lot of back and forth. It's basically here's, and I'm sure if you were an invited athlete, it might be a little bit different. It's not super anything super exciting.
Do they at least give you a ride to the start, or do you have to take the buses?
No,
You
we
get
take
a special bus.
they have athlete
Okay.
buses. That's the same. New York was the same.
Right.
New York, they you ride the buses, and I remember riding the bus to New York, and New York was the first. That was 2016. And I definitely felt way out of my element in 2016 in New York. And I mean, I'm sitting on the bus across from Gwen Jorgensen, and she had just won a gold medal at the 2016 Olympics. And I was just like, I remember texting my dad and just being like, what am I doing? This is ridiculous. I don't belong here. It was Molly Huddle was running her first New York. That was the field. And so I think that at this point, I'm no, I'm not gonna go run a 2:22, but I'm very comfortable, okay, this is what I'm gonna do, this is my goal. And yeah, I wanna run, maybe I'll be by myself. Everyone's like, no, you'll know. I was like, I have managed to be by myself in some of the biggest races possible. But I'm okay with that. I prefer it a little bit, actually.
Who are you most excited about possibly seeing at the beginning, before the race starts?
The one runner I would love to meet, and it was since I watched Boston in 2011, is Des Lipman. I love like I remember watching, I hadn't run a marathon yet, and I remember watching her get second. And then kind of I just like that she I just like her attitude. I like her story. She's actually a day older than I am. We are both, and so I was laughing. I'm like, great, I get to run in the Masters field with Des and I think Enda Kiplagat and all these amazing Masters women. She is the one runner that I would love to meet. She
Well,
just
Des,
seems.
if you're listening to our podcast, get in touch with us. We'll put you in touch with Allie, and you guys can connect at Boston. That's that is exciting. That was exactly my question too, as to who you're looking forward to. And have you run against any of the other women in the field, other than kind of the names, big names, but like any of the other names? Do you know them? Have you run against them before? Have you met them before?
I'm trying to think. I looked at the field. Nothing there. I was part of the Nike Dreamweaver project for the last couple of
Okay.
years. And I think there's a couple. I know there's a couple women who are ran there, who ran for them, who are also running Boston. Not necessarily Masters women, but just other women who are in that. I think Sarah Siebert is running. There's someone else I just can't remember off the top of my head. But I mean, primarily, I pretty much run. I run with a group. I run with the Garden State Track Club, and I run with a group of guys. I always have. I've always run with other guys. There are women I run with too, but pretty much, there's a couple of guys who live near me, and there's one of the guys I've run with for the last 10, 12 years.
Speaking of running, is there anything you're doing differently with your training this year, or anything kind of any tweaks that you've made, or anything now having the experience you've had at Boston and other races, anything you've done differently this year?
Not so much during training, other than really trying to get my goal for Boston is to break 2:40. I've never done that. And so really in shorter stuff, trying to really run a little bit faster than faster than I think I can. Like, even though like I've done a lot, I've accomplished a lot in running, I don't always have like a lot of confidence. Sometimes I'm like, yeah, I don't know, it just happened. Like, so more getting comfortable running a little bit faster and kind of knowing like, no, you can run, you know, this fast for a 4 mile tempo and you can do it twice. And, you know, basically to make whatever, like it's like 6:05 paces under 2:40 to make that seem like easier. And then in both in Atlanta and at 50K Worlds in Hyderabad, I had really bad calf cramping issues that I haven't had in other races. And that's something that we're kind of like, is it the shoes? Is it the course? Was it just, okay, it was really hot in India. is it hydration? Which is a little bit more like, so trying to play around with some of that, which is hard when it's winter in New Jersey and it's 30 degrees and it's not, you're not, I mean, I'm sweating, but it's not like crazy.
Have you made any changes to your training as you've entered kind of the master's field and as you've gotten older? Have you recognized anything that yourself you need to change?
So the biggest thing I think that, and it's not so much recently, but like when I was training with Tom, is all we did was just did running. And I mean, training for a marathon, I was doing 90 to 105 miles a week and could run really good long runs, whatever. And it just never quite transitioned to a race. Since I've been training with Alden and started because of when I was hurt. And I've done a lot more swimming, and not so much now. We kind of like early on. So like in late 2017, like 2018, 2019, all of like through like trials, I was probably swimming 2 to 3 days a week. And I think before I qualified for trials, I mean, I think I maybe hit like 71 miles a week. And then recently we've been back closer to like 80 mile weeks, and that works. So it's a little bit different. I did a couple 50Ks. So like it changed a little bit there. And I sometimes swimming, it's nice, but there's just sometimes it's just like a hassle. And I'm like, can I just go run instead? So I know like for this build already, I've been a little bit higher, and I know that like we're going to hit closer to probably like a couple like mid 80, probably close to 90 maybe. But like I've also gotten better at running easy runs a little bit slower and running workouts like faster. So, you know, it kind of balances out.
That's really interesting. I would imagine also looking at runners like Sika and her success with cross training and how it's made her a even better runner. She's so talented already. It's probably allowed you to embrace swimming a little bit more, seeing that it works for other runners to have that cross training. I also like that you talked about how you've made your easy paces a little bit easier. Can you give some examples of that? We've been asking our pro masters runners this question, and we really like to be able to share this with our listeners, because while none of us are as fast as you are, we still need a reminder as to how to vary our paces in our training and racing.
I'm still really bad at it. If I run an easy run and like 2 or 3 miles are like in the 8 minute pace range, it's really exciting. Basically my easy pace is like high, like 7:40s. It should be slower. I try. It doesn't always work. But back when I was training with Tom, I think all of our runs were probably like under 7 minute pace. Like,
and even 7:40 is still a good minute, yeah. And over a minute, yeah, and a half slower than your marathon pace.
Yeah.
That's and a big percentage.
We were running like really, really fast all the time. The one guy who I run with a lot, he is very good at running slow. And so like, there are some days that I'm like, can we just run together? And he's like, you're going too fast. I'm like, it's 7:50 pace. I can't run slower.
We like him. We approve.
He's great. And like, I need an easy day. But I've gotten a lot better, and it was sort of like, also like, oh my gosh, I'm running slow. Like, I'm not fast. It's stupid, like mental stuff that you, and that's like, no, you have a workout tomorrow. Like, slow down. Like, it's okay.
How do you
But it
balance the running with coaching? Because coaching, I mean, it may not be as physical, but you're on your feet, you're interacting with people. Is that hard to balance for you, that your training and your job?
No, it, like I said, what's been really nice is Tom hated my job, which he's like, can you just find a desk job? I'm like, no, I can't. But what's really nice is when Alden and I ran together the entire time that I trained with Tom. So for almost 10 years, we'd run, or probably a little less than that. We'd run, I guess it was seven or 8 years. We ran together. So he kind of knew, like, all right, this. And so I think when he does, like, when, he does my training, I think he kind of like takes that into account, like, okay, I'm standing. I'm like, yeah. He's like, how's your recovery going? I'm like, well, I'm coaching for 3 hours and, standing up. He's like, oh, okay. So he kind of knows. And I think it's like, I think he, in a way, like almost like doesn't build it into the training, but just like it takes that into account. Like, okay, you're gonna stand for however long. What is nice about it is I work afternoons and evenings. And yeah, I get home late, but that means in the winter when it's dark and icy, I don't have to be up running at 5:30 in the morning. So, in the summer I am because it's hot and no one's gonna run midday. But in the winter, like I can run it 11 o'clock in the end, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, and I can see the potholes and ice on the road, and it's maybe a little bit warmer. So it is kind of nice to be able to, like, okay, like, yeah, it's a weird job, I have weird hours, but like it kind of works for me. Doesn't work so great for like doubles, so we don't do that a lot, just because that gets a little hard. For the most part, we've kind of made it work.
I like how your coach truly incorporates what you do outside of running into your training. I'm sure there's a reason why your mileage is, while very high, is not at 100. It's in the 80s. And that is because of what you do outside of your running. And that way you're not burning the candle at both ends. And you obviously have been very successful under this formula, and you trust the process, you trust your coaching, you trust your training. And I just really like that. That is something that you're able to still train and run at such a high level while having a job that is not necessarily conducive for doing that. You definitely made it work. So for runners who are training for Boston right now, given that you have so much experience and also that you lead a life that is very similar to amateur runners and that you work very hard outside of your running, you can't devote your entire lifestyle to running, and you've been very successful. What advice do you have for runners who are training for Boston for a big goal right now?
Train the downhills. The first half of the race is straight downhill. And you need to know how to, like, I'm very comfortable running downhill. So run it. Boston is actually probably not the best race for me, because it is very easy for me to run way too fast. Yep, running hills are great, because you want to be strong, but you need to train some sort of downhill training. And it doesn't have to be like, you don't have to like do downhill like fast, but you need to be comfortable running downhill. And if you are a good downhill runner, you need to know how to control your speed going downhill.
That's such great advice. And I think that's often overlooked, Boston. So many people think training uphills for Boston. And you mentioned it earlier that you didn't even know you went through Heartbreak Hill. And we try to tell runners, Heartbreak Hill is not terrible, but it will feel terrible if you run the downhills incorrectly in the first half. Then it will feel bad, but it's not a big, for those of us who live in areas that have some hills, it's not so
Oh,
bad.
it's
But
not.
that is great advice. Well, we have so enjoyed talking to you, and we are really excited to see you up in Boston and see what you're able to do on the course. Hopefully we all get some decent weather up there this year. That's always the big wild card with Boston. But you clearly did pretty well. You've done well, at wine glass in pretty bad conditions. So clearly it doesn't affect you too bad. And like you said, we live in an area that's kind of cold and not always the best perfect training weather. So we are excited to see you, and we wish you all the best in the rest of your training. I don't like to say luck because luck is not a strategy, but I wish you the best in the rest of your training. And we really appreciate you spending time with us today to talk to us. And we're so excited for you to be part of the pro field this year, and excited to see what you're able to do.
Thank you. It was really nice having to be on a podcast. It's kind of fun.
Well, we're happy to be your first, and hopefully we will not be your last, because we think there's still a lot of great things ahead for you. And like Julie said at the beginning, we're masters runners ourselves. We coach a lot of masters runners. So to see somebody in their masters years, and like you mentioned, so many of the masters field now is just amazing. So
Yeah.
to see that is really it's inspiring, it's encouraging, and it's a great example for all of us. So thank you again, and we can't wait to see you in Boston.
Thank you.
Thank you, Allie. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Run Farther and Faster Boston Marathon podcast. We want to give a special thanks to our editor, Aaron Bryant. And if you enjoyed this episode and enjoy listening to our podcast, please share it with others, and please leave a review if you haven't done so already on iTunes. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.